Ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Daryl. Well, good morning, everyone. Is the mic working? Doesn't sound like it. Is it? Oh, okay. Don't sound as loud as usual. Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Fun crowd. Lots of bright orange out there and a lot of people gathered for what promises to be an interesting agenda this morning. Some long-time projects that we've been working on for a while. I'm Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. It's January 20th, and we're gathered for our regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I will now call to order. Okay, well, before we get into our agenda, we'll take a few minutes to have some opening comments. Hopefully my colleagues won't need closing comments as well, but we will spend a little bit of time talking about opening comments. Well, it's started off to be a busy year already, but I just wanted to focus my opening comments on an initiative that we started last year at the Commission and really relates very strongly with today's agenda, especially with the Dakota Access Project. So I wanted to talk a little bit about construction inspection and third-party construction inspection. This is something that the Public Service Commission does as part of its regular course of action. We provide permits to companies, and they spell out all the conditions that they're supposed to operate under and construct under. And then when the projects are completed, we go back and work with third-party construction inspectors to make sure that the projects were constructed according to our order or our permit. This happens on big and small projects. About a year ago, we started looking at our current construction inspection program. We hired third-party construction inspectors and work with them, and they go out and look at the projects and confirm to us that they were constructed as ordered or that there were certain issues. About a year ago, we started because of two reasons. First of all, there's a lot of infrastructure going in place in North Dakota, and the public wants to be assured that this stuff is being done right and done well. I agree with that. My colleagues agree with that. And also there was, growing number of complaints about reclamation and concerns. So we started looking at the tools that we have as regulators to work on behalf of the citizens in our state for those two issues, safe construction and good reclamation. And really our third-party construction inspection program is the best tool we have for that. So we looked at this project and this initiative, and we looked at ways that we could beef up what we were already doing. And so we have modified our initial construction inspection contracting process. And now, today, and as of a couple months ago, we started this. We're more specific about what we require of our third-party construction inspections. So they will go out on a new project before there's any dirt moved with the contractors and make sure that they're overseeing the initial digging and the topsoil and subsoil segregation. Make sure that the contractors know how to do that, that they're comfortable that that's being done correctly. In talking with our experts, one of whom is Jim Deutsch, who oversees the mining and reclamation program, proper topsoil and subsoil segregation, is one of the keys to good reclamation. So we do that. These contractors will do that on every single spread that occurs on Dakota Access, the construction crews out there. Then they go out during the actual construction projects a number of times, make sure that what's being stated in our order is being done out in the field. And then they will go out again when the line is completed, and there's they're respreading the initial dirt back in and reseeding, and oversee that process and make sure that the contractors are doing it correctly. And then finally, 1 year after reclamation is complete, the inspectors will go out a final time and look at how the regrowth is occurring. We think that this is a really good setup for both good operations, good construction, which is the key to safe long-term operations of pipeline projects. It's also an important piece for good reclamation, and really I think will go a long way to meeting some of the needs of the landowners in North Dakota who want to be assured that their land is returned to its original state after construction. So that's what the PSC has initiated here. You'll see that in some of our discussion today about this project. And we feel that it's the right and the responsible thing to be doing from our side of things and holding up our responsibility to the citizens of the state once we provide permits. So that concludes my opening comments. We'll talk more a little bit more about that in the actual regular agenda. And I will pass it over to Commissioner Crispin.
Very interesting. And in light of the even larger than normal crowd who come to see the PSC in action, I will defer on opening comments.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just offer up two things. The sport in the NDSU attire, in case you hadn't noticed today. Just a thought, tomorrow we have a hearing in North Dakota State for a pipeline. And just we've had hearings up at UND before, and we offered up the law school to come, and a lot of the students came out. We actually ended up hiring some people out of those law classes that came to some of our hearings. So tomorrow at NDSU, our hearing's 9 o'clock at the Alumni Center, and we've reached out to NDSU and invited their different departments to come over, their faculty and their students, to look at the process. Their engineering students may someday come in front of us. We see a lot of our natural resource professionals, their communication people, so we're hoping for a good turnout for the hearing tomorrow. And it also was a good learning opportunity because I really believe strongly in the PSC process of our hearings. I mean, Julie talked about the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's been a lot of media attention, a lot of attention to this hearing, but it's no different than every other hearing we do. We go out, we develop a record, we make a decision, and we move forward. So I really believe in the process, and I look forward to any questions that will come after today's meeting.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Well, moving on to our agenda, we have a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. If I could, I'd like to rearrange just a bookkeeping item here, rearrange the order and move up JF5, which was added just before the meeting. That is the construction inspection contract for Dakota Access, and make that JF right after JF1 so we can do those two items back to back. Okay.
Madam Chair, did you have other rearrangements?
Well, I'll go into the order then after that.
Before we go into JF1, I would like to make a statement.
The floor is yours.
Okay. In April of 2015, I notified the Commission by letter of certain facts related to a potential conflict of interest in this case, the Dakota Access case. Also in that letter, I notified the Commission of my conclusion at that time, and based on those facts, that existing circumstances did not constitute a conflict of interest. I noted in that letter that because I saw no conflict or potential conflict, I would not recuse myself at that time from further consideration, from further participation in the case. I have produced a revised written notification dated January 11th to the Commission and all involved that certain facts have now changed. Dakota Access LLC subsequently entered into negotiations with my mother-in-law to acquire an easement to allow them to alter their route and place the pipeline on her property for approximately 2,755 feet. My mother-in-law also conveyed the property in question to my wife and sister-in-law and reserved a life estate for herself. So based on these changed facts, I have now recused myself as of before the last work session from further participation in this case. And that, of course, would also include JF2 since it is part of the same case.
Or JF5.
Five that will be done after JF1, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Randy. Thanks. Okay. I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project Siting Application Case Number PU-14-842.
Second.
I'll go through some of the history on this case just for the record here. On December 22nd of 2014, Dakota Access LLC filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for this project, 358 miles of pipeline and associated facilities in North Dakota. They also filed an application for waivers of procedures and time schedules of a number of items in state law. On March 25th, the Commission deemed these applications complete, conditioned upon receiving from the applicant 10 days prior to the first hearing on the case, the wetlands and water bodies field survey report, the wildlife inventory field survey report, the habitat assessment field survey report, and the tree and shrub inventory reports. So they had filed the application, but a number of the studies weren't complete. So we scheduled the hearings for May 28th in Mandan, June 15th in Kildare, and June 26th in Williston. On April 14th and May 15th, Dakota Access filed those necessary reports. And then in May 11th, the 15th, 18th, and 20th, and 22nd, petitions to intervene were filed by the interveners. On May 27th, the procedural hearing officer granted those petitions, and they were deemed official interveners. On September, and then the hearings were held as scheduled in each of those locations. On September 14th, Dakota Access filed adjustments to the corridor and route, identified for, 17 different adjustments. Two were proposed outside the field survey area. Since those were different from the original hearing, we issued another notice of opportunity for a hearing and on those 17 adjustments that would expire on October 22nd, and we didn't receive any requests for a hearing on those route adjustments. Okay. So getting into some of the details on this project. This is the line. Starts in Stanley and runs through Kitty Corner across North Dakota. This is a 358-mile pipeline project, and I'm just going to go through. There's a lot of different facilities associated with this. It starts in Stanley, North Dakota, with two 120,000-barrel tanks and proceeds west to Ramberg, North Dakota. The pipe is 12 inches for that first stretch. In Ramberg, there's a 100,000-barrel tank, 150,000-barrel tank, and a 200,000-barrel tank. Then it proceeds to Epping, a 20-inch pipeline to Epping, 100,000-barrel tank, and 150,000-barrel tank. After Epping, it proceeds to Trenton, west and south to Trenton. The pipe is still 20 inches. And in Trenton, there's a 100,000-barrel tank and 150,000-barrel tank. The pipeline then expands to 24 inches and proceeds south and a little east again to Watford City, where there are two 100,000-barrel tanks, a 150,000-barrel tank. Then the pipe expands to 30 inches and proceeds to Johnson Corner, where there are two 200,000-barrel tanks. And then it cuts across east and south through the remainder of North Dakota and exits North Dakota near on the South Dakota border near, what was the town? Whitefield or some town I actually haven't been to. The maximum capacity of the project ranges from 100,000 barrels per day on the original part near Stanley and expands to 600,000 barrels per day from Watford City to the South Dakota border. It is being built and constructed, will be built and constructed according to USDOT regulations governing the transportation of crude oil, included in USDOT regulations set forth in 49 Code of Federal Regulations, Part 195. The total cost of the project in North Dakota is estimated to be $1.4 billion. There were 30 different local, state, and federal agencies consulted through the permitting process, and all their input has been incorporated into the record and into this order today. Dakota Access, in terms of some of our specific siting criteria, Dakota Access testified that 509 cultural resource sites were identified during their field surveys. They further testified that the survey results were provided to SHPO for review and that they will continue to work with the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office to avoid and mitigate impacts to those cultural resources. The Missouri River in North Dakota has been designated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as critical habitat for both the interior least tern and the piping plover. And in order to mitigate that impact, the project will be bored under the Missouri River and its adjacent lands, which effectively avoids this exclusion area. And there aren't any other exclusion areas present in the survey. area or the route. The project will also be bored. This is in terms of avoidance areas, not exclusion areas, avoidance areas. The project will be bored under the Little Missouri River, which is an avoidance area. And it will be bored in addition, or it will be moved back, and additional isolating valves will be installed on the City of Williston's wellhead protection area, according to PHMSA requirements, and that effectively mitigates that avoidance area. Two scenic byways are considered avoidance areas and will be crossed, both by boring, again, effectively avoiding that area. And Dakota Access indicated that there are 4 businesses and 8 rural residences located within 500 feet of the route, and they obtained waivers from all of those businesses and rural residences meeting that criteria as well. So in terms of measures to minimize impact, there are 13 measures spelled out in this order to mitigate the impact, minimize the impact of this project. And then the company also agreed to 35 additional measures that are stipulated in an attachment to this order that spell out their various construction, operation, and reclamation requirements, as well as landowner communication and reroutes processes for the life of the project. Some of the measures included in this order for minimizing impact are that Dakota Access will have a supervisory control and data acquisition system installed as part of the project. Operations will be continuously monitored by a control center located in Houston, Texas. They testified that all the valves will be installed with remote actuators that will allow them to be closed remotely from the control center in the event of an emergency. 100% of all the field welds will be tested. Pumps will be located at pump terminals within enclosed and insulated buildings to minimize noise. Dakota Access indicated that emergency response equipment will be located in Epping, Williston, Watford City, and Bismarck, North Dakota. Dakota Access also testified it will participate in the North Dakota One call, and it will contract with a third-party inspection firm to ensure regulatory and environmental compliance. They also testified that the Missouri River will be bored at both locations where it is crossed by the route. The estimated depth of the bore beneath the riverbed will be 35 feet at its northern crossing and 64 feet at its southern crossing south of Bismarck. Dakota Access further testified that the Little Missouri River, the Knife River, the Heart River, and both crossings of Cherry Creek will also be bored in order to minimize environmental impacts to those water bodies. So that's 7 river crossings, all of which will be bored. And then where the co-location of the project occurs with North Dakota Pipeline Company's permitted routes, Dakota Access and North Dakota Pipeline Company have agreed to separation distances, the width and restoration of temporary workspaces, buffer zones, and communications protocol, and have filed that agreement with our office, which is also incorporated into this order. And finally, Dakota Access, according to this order, shall file with the Commission documentation from the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office indicating concurrence that no historic properties or sites will be affected prior to beginning construction on any of the project where SHPO concurrence has not yet been received. So that is a contingency of this order. So, in summary, this is a massive infrastructure construction project, and it's really extremely important to the long-term future of North Dakota's oil industry. This project has 600,000 barrels per day of export capacity, and we all know that pipelines are the safest, most efficient, most environmentally sound way to transport crude oil. This project will take trucks off the road, and it will provide us a safe alternative to crude by rail. It is also a more cost-effective way for the industry to transport its product, which helps with the economies of production in North Dakota. We had an exhaustive review process at the Commission. There was a lot of public input, and in that process, the two issues that became most apparent of concern to the public were reclamation and routing. We have addressed reclamation extensively in this project, as I suspect that a lot of the people have done in their easements as well. But as I outlined in my opening comments, we have a pretty thorough third-party construction inspection project that's going to ultimately help provide for a good reclamation outcome from the very beginning through the end of this project, starting with the very first shovel of dirt that is performed in the construction process. In terms of the routing, there were more than 17 reroutes already incorporated into this project, many of them at landowner requests. I applaud the company for their sincere efforts in working with the landowner concerns and trying to do their best to mitigate those issues and deal with them on the front end. I think the fact that 95% of the landowners have signed voluntary easements for this project as of last week when we had our last work session indicates that, you know, a vast majority of the landowners that the company is working with are satisfied and that their needs are being met by this project. Finally, just in terms of safety issues, we looked extensively at the safety plans and the operations, the construction, and every aspect of this project. We looked at spill modeling and the history of this company's spill and leak history, and have been assured that the best industry practices for operations, leak detection, and emergency response are incorporated into this project. I wanted to talk just briefly about taxes. At the very first hearing, the company testified that in the North Dakota project, as I stated, is $1.4 billion. They will pay estimating that they'll pay almost $40 million in state sales tax, $1.7 million in local sales tax, $1.5 million in state income tax, and $13.4 million a year in local property taxes as a result of this project. We see a lot of orange shirts in here. This project has been at all the hearings. We had labor representatives testify as to the importance of this project and the importance that it means in terms of jobs. I don't have any exact job numbers, but I'm sure the company does. But we know that this is an important job creator and that the labor industry has really been supportive of this project. So in summary, we had thorough review. It was totally transparent. There was broad public input. We listened to the public input. The company listened to the public input. And this permit today really provides for a sound, safe project that will provide efficient, environmentally sound way to transport Bakken crude for many decades to come. And I'm really pleased to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
That was pretty good, Commissioner. Laid it all out there. I have hardly anything to add. Yeah, I just want to thank you for your work on this as the portfolio holder and chair. And also, Julie Prescott, our staff does a great job. And, Julie, you spent a lot of hours on this with SAC, and thank you for getting it to this order today. Just a couple of thoughts. We followed the process. We developed a solid record. I intend to support this because it's the right decision. It's that easy. We have the hearings. We developed the information. We base it on the record and our siting criteria. And this is the right decision. North Dakota and the United States need to keep improving our transportation network, whether it's for crude, whether it's for ag commodities, no matter what it might be. And it's great we're making these kind of investments. It's great for the state. It's great for the country. It goes back to one of the reasons that I sought this job is energy security for our country. I'd much rather have oil coming out of the United States than relying on countries overseas to develop these products. So this is the right decision. We follow the process. You laid it out perfectly. And the last thing I'll say is I appreciate your work on the remediation, but I will go back to the basics of the most popular reason, or I guess the biggest reason pipelines fail is third-party damage. My infamous call before you dig, we cannot forget about that. We have to do the remediation properly, but call before you dig, dig safely, and clean up your flags. And we're not going to stop on that. It's funny how the discussion has changed so much from pipeline safety to now remediation, which is important. That means that we're evolving as a state understanding the infrastructure. But I certainly intend to support this, and thank you for your work on this. Yep.
I will also want to echo, it was on my notes, but my wrong page of notes, but Julie, you've worked really hard on this project. You've responded to absolutely every question I've had, other commissioners have had. It's been a long process, and you've taken it really seriously, all aspects of it, our side and the public side, and really kudos to you and to Pat for managing your work, and to Zach Pelham, who couldn't be here today but was our attorney on the project as well. So thank you.
Well, and to add on that, this is not the only project that the PSC is working on right now. I mean, it's not the only project that all of you are working on. You all do a great job, and we appreciate that.
I'm excited to move a gigantic box of information out of my desk later this week and into permanent storage. So,
is there any further discussion? Sensing none, considering Commissioner Crispin has removed himself from the vote, I'm going to proceed with a roll call vote. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Aye.
Commissioner Kalk.
Aye.
The motion is approved.
Well, that's a first. You've never been. All right. We'll move on to JF5 then. I move the commission execute a contract with K2 Engineering and Consultants Incorporated for construction inspection services in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project siting application case number PU-14-842, conditioned upon receiving an additional $100,000 siting fee funds from Dakota Access LLC. I further move the commission seek approval from the Emergency Commission at its next meeting for these additional funds.
Second.
Just to provide a little context for this, we usually do these motions in consent, but that's why I talked about this ahead of time, so you had some context on the construction inspection. But every time a company files an application for a permit to our office, they have a filing fee that they file with that that covers the costs, our costs of processing that permit, everything except for our staff costs. That's covered by the citizens of North Dakota. The filing fee covers all the hearing costs. If we have to hire an outside attorney, covers those costs, covers our costs to notice and publish notices in the papers. It covers transportation to and from the hearings, all of those issues. By state law, the filing fee is capped at $100,000. There is a formula that dictates what that filing fee is. I believe it's $10,000 per $100,000 in costs of the project. But for this project, which was $1.4 billion, that would have been a pretty extensive filing fee. So the law requires that it's capped at $100,000. In this case, $100,000 isn't enough for us to process this application for the hearing, the attorney fees, three hearings, transportation to all those, and the third-party inspection contracts. Construction inspection contracts. So the company has agreed to file an additional $100,000, and law requires that we go to the Emergency Commission for authorization for that, which we will be doing at their next hearing and or at their next meeting. And I look forward to talking to them about this process and receiving their approval.
We have a motion, a second, and further discussion.
Maybe I would just add a finer point to what Commissioner Fedorchuk said. A few years ago, the legislature gave the commission the authority to go seek these siting dollars, if you will, and it was an offset. Otherwise, the commission would need to hire another 10, 15, 20 full-time employees. This is a great way to manage it to where the cost causers, the companies that are building things, they pay an additional filing fee that we can use to help manage these cases. And at some point in time, if it ever slows down the construction of these kind of projects, then those contracts will not be needed, and you won't have a bunch of FTEs that you have to let go. So I think this is a great way. I appreciate the way Commissioner Fedorchuk has extended it to, I think, what it was intended to do, to make sure we meet all the requirements of the need of the project. So thank you for your work on this, and I look forward to going in front of the Emergency Commission.
Is there any further discussion?
And I would say if you want to go alone, that's fine. We're there for you.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I again will proceed with a roll call vote. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Aye.
Commissioner Kalk?
Aye.
Motion is approved.
Okay. Moving on to the regular order then, JF2, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Highland Crude LLC, Newtown Expansion Project, Montrose County Siting Application Case Number PU-15-416.
Second.
On June 26, Highland Crude filed a consolidated application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Montrose County. The project consists of installation of interconnected facilities to a third-party storage facility and an existing approximately 42.5-mile 8-inch crude oil pipeline. On September 17, we had a hearing on this project at 9 a.m. in Stanley, North Dakota. The existing 42.5-mile 8-inch underground pipeline runs from Newtown, a third-party storage facility owned by Targa Badlands LLC called the Newtown Terminal. The interconnection will be constructed within the Targa Newtown Terminal site and will consist of measurement facilities, interconnecting piping, and associated above-ground appurtenance. What is that word? Above-ground facilities and ancillary electronic control systems. The existing Newtown pipeline runs from the White Earth Injection Station to Dakota Plains Rail Terminal Interconnect, as depicted in Hearing Exhibit 2. The existing Newtown pipeline was constructed using 8-inch diameter steel pipeline, and when installed, the pipe was tested to maximum operating pressure of 1440 pounds per square inch. The maximum design flow rate of the project is 36,000 barrels of oil per day, and the total project cost is $15 million. The project is located within 500 feet of 19 occupied residents. Highland obtained waivers of the avoidance area from all affected landowners. And as noted in the record, the SHPO concurred with Highland's Class 3 Cultural Resource Study recommendation that no historic properties or sites will be affected by the project. Highland testified the project will be monitored 24 hours per day, 7 days a week at a control center in Houston, Texas, and they have the ability to remotely shut down the project. They're also participating in the one-call excavation system. So just in summary of this project, this is another conversion-type facility or project, a few additional above-ground facilities added, and then converting a big, long pipeline. I think it's a good project, maximizes infrastructure that already exists in the ground, helps, which also helps minimize impact of new construction, and really provides the companies, this company, more flexibility and to use their infrastructure as efficiently as possible. So I think our review has been complete in this project, and I'm happy to support it.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I want to just take a short 30-second break and consult with my colleagues about something really quick.
That's up to you.
It's
okay with me.
Okay. I think we'll break from regular order since there are so many people here who might just be here for the Dakota Access piece. So rather than make you all wait until we get through the rest of our business, we'll go ahead and take questions on that project, and then you're certainly welcome and encouraged to stay. But we'll break for questions from the media and anyone else, and then we'll go back to resuming our regular agenda. And we'll take additional questions at the end as well on the remaining items on the agenda. So, are there any questions on Dakota Access while it's fresh? You thought you had another 30 minutes to think of them all?
I'm sure that would be fine to take them at the end.
If well. You'd rather wait till the end, we sure can.
Well, let's keep rolling if there's nothing.
Keep rolling? All right.
There's going to be a lot of questions about the Brady Wind Farm.
That's true.
There is.
Okay. Never tell me that we made you sit here through long, boring meetings to get to your simple questions from the beginning.
They okay. might be long, but we have no boring meetings here.
JF3. I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit and issue a notice of filings and public hearing in 1 O'Clock and Pipeline LLC, 8-inch NGL Pipeline, McKenzie and Dunn County, citing application case number PU-15-801.
Second.
1 Oak Bakken Pipeline has filed applications for a route permit and corridor and route permit for an 8-inch outside diameter natural gas liquid pipeline totaling approximately 38 miles in length. The pipe will originate at 1 Oak Rockies Midstream LLC Bear Creek Plant in Dunn County and extend
to the... Do I need to redo all that? Esther?
I don't know. The mics are on.
I wasn't. Apparently, mine was off.
You were picked up on.
Okay, I'll keep going then. The pipeline will originate in the Bear Creek Plant in Dunn County, extend to the northwest to terminate and interconnect with One Oak's existing Targa pipeline in McKenzie County, North Dakota, The Bear Creek plant is under construction, anticipated to complete in September of 2016. The company is looking at 2 points for the interconnection with the Targa pipeline, depending on landowner negotiations. The preferred interconnection is at a receiver site at One Oaks Targa Lateral Pipeline, approximately 8 miles south of Wofford City. The alternative tying is at the Targa gas plant, which is not a One Oak facility, and result in the line being approximately 37 miles in length. The line will carry NGL from the Bear Creek plant to the Targa NGL pipeline, then onto other pipelines for delivery to facilities in the Mid-Continent and Gulf Coast for additional processing. We're deeming today the application complete, and we'll set a hearing date and time for Killdeer in the next probably 6 to 8 weeks. And we will set that during the admin portion of our meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I always get a lot of questions about, is it slowing down at the PSC? It's not. You can just see here you have another project coming in for natural gas. It's another great use of the product, and look forward to a good hearing up there and following the process. But it's really nice to see the companies particularly pushing forward with developing their infrastructure.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
I'll now get into some of these that I think have drawn such a large crowd today. I move the commission close out contract number AM-730-15 with BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated for completion of drilling and grouting, and close out contract number AM-731-15 with Northeast Technical Services Incorporated for completion of testing services, both associated with the 2015 Scranton-Bowman Phase 3 and Wilton AML project.
Second.
On May 27th of last year, the Commission entered into a contract with BNC Concrete Pumping for drilling and grouting services at the Scranton-Bowman Phase 3 and Wilton AML project, and a contract with Northeast Technical Services for the associated grout testing and other services. This project involved rotary drilling to locate underground mine voids and injection of pressurized grout into mine voids beneath roads in Bowman, Adams, and Burley counties. The original contract with BNC was in the amount of $1,440,075. The total cost was $1,457,000 and change, which is just over $17,000 more than the original contract amount. 4 change orders were issued to move grout between locations and to increase the total amount of grout at a couple of the sites. The drilling and grouting work began on June 25th, and the last work was completed on November 20th. The original contract with Northeast Technical Services for the related services was the amount of just over $63,500. The final cost was just over $52,000. Joan Briner supervised this project, and the work of both contractors was completed to her satisfaction. Final invoices have been submitted and paid, so the contracts can now be closed out.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-29, canceling warehouse license number 245 issued to Rolla Cooperative Grain at Rolla, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Rolla is discontinued.
Second.
Commission received a request to discontinue business from the Rolla Cooperative. This warehouse was sold to and will be licensed by North Central Grain Cooperative of Bisbee. Rolla Cooperative Grain has no unpaid scale tickets and no outstanding warehouse receipt obligations. North Central Grain purchased all of the grain inventory and assumed all credit sale contract obligations. Staff recommends the request be approved. And I would add that Rolla is the proud hometown of former Governor Al Olson.
And current Congressman Kevin Cramer. Kevin was born in Rolla.
Oh. Well, they must be awful proud.
I thought he was can-do.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
You have to check.
He's got that can-do spirit, you know.
Because Rolla and he lived in can-do. We'll see. I'll text him. We'll Wikipedia it.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Now we worked our way through that controversy. RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-28, granting the request of North Central Grain Cooperative of Bisbee, North Dakota, to operate a 783,000 bushel grain warehouse at Rolla, North Dakota.
Second.
North Central Grain Cooperative of Bisbee filed a license application to operate this 783,000 bushel warehouse. North Central operates grain warehouses at Bisbee, Perth, Rock Lake, and Rolette. With the addition of the Rolla location, North Central will have a total license capacity of 5,543,000 bushels, which requires a $1,260,000 grain warehouse bond. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the license be issued. I will point out that Rolette is the hometown of Bill Marcille Sr., the longtime CEO of Forum Communications, and I'm sure Mike wishes he was here to have picked that up. And I also will point out that Bisbee was named after Colonel Andrew Bisbee, who was a Civil War veteran and subsequently served in the North Dakota State Senate. And having the opportunity to have served in that body, I will point out that I'm not sure, but I believe he's probably the only Civil War veteran to have served in our state Senate. And while I'm not sure of that, I am sure that despite some of the things that are said about the average age of the Senate, I'm very confident that there are no Civil War veterans currently serving in the state Senate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number AU-16-30, granting a request for certification of America's Auction and Appraisal Academy of Springdale, Arkansas, as an approved auction school as required by North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-08-01-01.
Second.
Under North Dakota Administrative Code, an auction school must apply to the commission to have its courses of study approved for use by North Dakota auctioneers. In December, America's Auction and Appraisal filed a request for certification with the commission. Staff worked with school personnel to obtain all required information, and the requested information was recently filed. There are a number of things that they must do in order to be approved, having to do with hours of study, the amount of those hours under a licensed auctioneer, the various, I'm going to just read through a number of these because I think it's interesting. We kind of take these auctioneers for granted. It's a much more technical career than what we probably think sometimes. They must have instruction in ethics, bid calling, sales management, advertising, contracts, accounting and bookkeeping, real estate, appraisals, closing statements, license law, uniform commercial codes, tax collection, bulk sales, and firearms. And then we also have standards for their grading requirements. America's Auction and Appraisal Academy meets or exceeds these requirements. So the request for certification is in order, and staff recommends the commission certify America's Auction and Appraisal Academy as an approved auction school. And I just want to reemphasize that, you know, sometimes we're at a fundraiser or something and the auctioneer volunteers their time and jumps up and we think it's just a matter of being able to talk fast and have a microphone. It is a very detailed and complex career path these people go through and a lot of extensive training.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
How do they learn how to talk so fast? What it's part of that training is that covering?
It's a gift.
Or a curse.
Your is second there, career, third right. career.
Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC5, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-31, granting the request of Patterson Grain, LLC of Botno, North Dakota, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Patterson Grain filed a license application to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota for the purpose of soliciting grain for future delivery to its new grain terminal, which is currently under construction in Botno. Patterson Grain estimates it will contract approximately 1,825,000 bushels during its first year in operation, and they filed a $520,000 bond. Patterson Grain notified the commission it has not operated as a roving grain buyer in the state, and statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends a roving grain buyer license be issued. I do want to point out that Botno is, of course, the very proud hometown to Commissioner Major Dr. Brian P. Kalk, our own fellow commissioner, as well as Gary Dahl, the inventor of the pet rock. So, two very proud instances.
People from Botno are sharp.
But I have one more to add on a more serious note. Not that Commissioner Major Dr. Kalk isn't serious, but Annie's House Chalet up there at the ski lodge is a ski facility for handicapped children and wounded vets. I just wanted to take this opportunity to throw out a plug. Annie's House is named after Ann Nicole Nelson, who was the only North Dakotan killed in the Twin Tower attack. And it's a wonderful thing up there, right north of Botno along the Canadian border, and I wanted to take an opportunity to throw out a plug for Annie's House.
Mm-hmm. Neat project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC6, I move the commission approve the Wilton Phase 2 and Bowman Foxhole projects as major projects for abandoned mine reclamation in 2016 and submit the 2016 to 2019 North Dakota Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Simplified Grant Application to the Office of Surface Mining to request $2,796,000 in federal funds.
Second.
This is slightly more than last year. We're on the minimum amount on AML projects of $3 million, but then you subtract the sequestration, and this year the sequestration is slightly less than last year. So that's where the 2.796 comes from. And I mentioned the 2016 to 2019. This is 1 year's amount, but it can be spread out over multiple years if bidding or weather or things like that to cause us to choose to do that. I also would throw out that only with the federal government would you have the term simplified in the title North Dakota Abandoned Mine Lands Reclamation Simplified Grant Application. Quite a title to include the word simplified.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And lastly, RC7, and with the commission issue a notice of opportunity for comment, and Mid-Continent Communications/Red River Rural Telephone interconnection agreement application PU-16-36.
Second.
On January 13th, Mid-Continent Communications entered into an interconnection agreement with Red River Rural Telephone Association. The agreement sets forth terms and conditions under which Red River will provide network interconnection services, exchange of traffic, number portability, and ancillary services to Mid-Continent in the Hankinson, Lidgerwood, and Fairmount exchanges. The agreement was filed with the Commission on January 14th. Mid-Continent has requested approval of the interconnection agreement. This agreement was filed under Section 252 of the Telecommunications Act of 96. The Act requires that any agreement adopted by negotiation or arbitration be submitted for approval to this commission. The commission may only reject an agreement if it finds that the agreement discriminates against the telecommunications carrier that was not party to the agreement, or that implementation of the agreement is not consistent with the public interest, convenience, and necessity. And we will receive written comments on this agreement until February 23rd.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I was excited when I saw this come in front of us. I know that these two have been working on this for a long time, and we've had some questions about who's serving whom and what they're going to do down in that area. And I look forward to reviewing the agreement fully. And I also would just say, I know obviously you two were there, but yesterday the commission and staff met with the North Dakota Association of Telephone Cooperatives as well as other telcos. And one of the topics came up is we asked how they're doing with their broadband deployment. And many of the telcos are at 100%. I would say almost all will be at 100% by the end of this year. And then by the end of 2017, they'll all be broadband capable. So that was huge to get those numbers. And most of them are actually going to be gig capable within the next year or so as well. So they've done a great job of expanding the broadband throughout the state to everyone. And North Dakota leads the country in doing this deployment to rural areas. They should be clapping for that. Where'd those guys go?
I know.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Portfolio concluded.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add to Commissioner Crispin, did you know Commissioner Crispin who the town of Botno was named after?
Mr. Botno, but I don't know.
Maybe it's Mrs. Botno?
Could be.
I'm pretty sure.
Pierre Botno was a French trapper and trader, set up the town of Botno a mile and a half north of where it's at right now. But when the railroad came through, they decided they should move the town closer to the railroad so they didn't have to haul the stuff so far. So Botno is one of those communities that was settled up by a river north of town. Railroad comes through the whole town, moved to the south. And the town is still not growing to the original site, so we're hoping for more growth up there. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission deem the applications complete and issue a notice of filing and public hearing in Brady Wind LLC, Brady Wind Energy Center, Stark County, setting applications, case number PU15690, and Brady Wind LLC 230 KV transmission line, Stark County, setting applications, case number PU15797.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Okay. A public hearing on the application for case number 15690 is scheduled for March 2nd, 9 o'clock Mountain Time at the City Hall in Dickinson, North Dakota. And a public hearing for the second application is set for the same location starting at 11 o'clock Mountain Time, also in Dickinson, North Dakota. Basically, this is two different cases. The first one is the Brady Wind LLC Wind Energy Center, consisting of up to 87 wind turbines and associated facilities to produce no more than 150 megawatts. The anticipated cost of the wind farm is around $235 million. The Brady Wind LLC filed an application for 19 miles of 230 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities, and the cost of that transmission line is roughly $12 million. So this notice today sets the hearing for both of those cases. We do have a map if anyone would like to look at it, but basically the wind farm project layout is in the southern end of Stark County, right where the county touches Hedinger County, or you could imagine 6 miles north of the town of New England. So it's right there straddling Highway 22 on the southern edge of Stark County is where the layout of the proposed wind farm is at. And the associated transmission line basically sets up from the center of the proposed location of the wind farm, running to the west to the Belfield Rain Station, which is a Basin Electric line. So while it's not one of our siting criteria, I believe Basin Electric is going to be the individual who's going to be using the power from this wind farm. So I look forward to a good public hearing on this one. There was a lot of discussion here a while back about a proposed wind farm around the city of Taylor. I believe that this is I won't call it Taylor 2, but I think this is they couldn't make it work out up in that area for a variety of reasons. And so now we'll be having the hearing for the Brady Wind Farm north of the city of New England. And everything appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
This is just a procedural question, Brian, but since we're noticing the two hearings at different times, How will that work? Because the first hearing won't be done in 2 hours, and are we actually going to do separate hearings on both, or are we trying to consolidate them?
I'll have to double check with Jerry. I can't remember how we laid that out. Are we going to do two separate hearings, break one to the other, or consolidate for the...
The way it's set up is we would do the transmission line hearing at 9, and then thinking that would probably be done before lunch, we would try to start the wind farm hearing at 11 and probably be breaking for lunch.
So it looks like you've got the, if the numbers are correct and the order it's switched in the notice of filings and public hearings, 690, 15-690.
Is actually the wind
farm. Is the wind farm, and that shows starting at 9. And then it says at 11, 15-797.
Did I get that backwards?
Well, you might want to double-check it.
Okay.
It looks like it. If you, what you said is what your intention was, which I think is smart, to have the wind farm hearing first and the transmission line second.
We were going to do the wind farm second and then...
Okay, the transmission line first. Okay, but the way you've got it here, it's just the opposite.
Let me make sure on that for you.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's do this if we could.
The transmission line first, because it's not going to take as long, and then the wind farm.
Yeah. Could we do this, Madam Chair? That's a great catch. We could just hold off on this and let Jerry correct it.
Sure.
And
then
I'll correct it right now.
And then we'll vote on it either in our administrative portion of the meeting.
Sure.
Perfect. So, but everything, I think, with the exception of the...
I'm sorry, I thought you were pausing.
Go ahead.
The motion doesn't really reflect that. So I think with that noted, I'd be
just make sure
willing to vote on it at this point, and with that understanding that the transmission line will be the first hearing at 9 and the wind farm will be the second hearing at 11.
Okay.
Yeah, the notice is what needs to be corrected, it looks like.
Okay, well, thank you. But it will be interesting to see how this plays out, because staff has been notified that there may be a Brady 2 coming, so there's going to be potentially more wind development in that area. But you're okay with the back-to-back hearings? I guess we hadn't a chance.
I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other than
I
those
always
except-
think it's better to consolidate them, though, personally, just because sometimes you end up covering the same information twice, and I don't know. But I haven't looked at these two applications close enough to know there must be rationale for separating them, because Jerry doesn't do things that don't make sense.
Thanks, Jerry.
Sometimes he is backwards, so, apparently.
Well, I should have caught that, too, so thank you. But the motion is in order, and then we can clean up the notice before we...
Okay.
So, thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Jerry. And thank you, Madam Chair, for catching that. The item BK2. I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's customer credit DOE settlement application, case number PU16-19.
Second.
A little background on this. Over the last, 5 years, the Commission has been involved with getting a DOE refund to Xcel for money that Xcel customers have paid in the nuclear storage issue. Dating back to 2011, that was the first time that the Department of Energy refunded that money back to the investor owns because of a court case, Billy, that basically said that the federal government was supposed to have the storage facility in place. The companies had paid money, and therefore they hadn't done anything, so the money needed to come back. So back in 2011, over $4 million was returned back to North Dakota ratepayers for the period of 1998 to 2008. In 2012-13, there was basically also money that came back for part of that settlement, but it wasn't broken out in a separate proceeding like it is today, because that was part of our rate case settlement that we dealt with Xcel Energy. So the credits that came back during those periods of time, which were basically almost $4 million in those years, were part of the offset during the rate case. Now, today's motion sets forward the credit that will come back to potentially North Dakota ratepayers of Xcel Energy, roughly $700,000. Anyone requesting a hearing must notify us by March 1st. Otherwise, we can proceed with an informal or work session on this. If you look at the amount of money, roughly the customer using 800 kilowatts, it would be potentially a bill credit of about $3 a month that would come back as part of this agreement. So, you know, the nuclear waste storage issue is still a hot topic. I'm very glad that this commission and other commissions entered into the fray, you know, back, you know, roughly 10 years ago or maybe even earlier, to make sure that the federal government wasn't holding this money, they could put it back. And so this today will be for 2014, but I'm also anticipating the same type of numbers for 2015 and for 2016. So it's good that this money comes back to North Dakota ratepayers, but we still need to solve the long-term nuclear waste storage issue. And I think it was a couple of meetings ago we talked about our commission joining the Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition, and I still think that's a good idea, and we're all three involved in NARUC, and I've spent more time the last couple of years on this issue, and Greg White, the former chair of the Nuclear Committee inside of NARUC, is now the head of NARUC. So I know NARUC and others are heavily engaged in this, but it's a huge issue because the coal fleet continues to be under attack. We've got the Clean Power Plan and all those discussions going on. So, you know, you have baseload coal power, which is questionable future, and it's going to be quite a fight. Well, there's not going to be any nuclear plants being built down the road if we can't figure out the storage issue. So I'm really glad that the opportunity to have the money go back to customers is there, but we still need to stay engaged in the storage issue.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I did add that Nuclear Waste Strategy Coalition back to the agenda because I missed the discussion last time. I just want to circle back and make sure we have a decision on whether we're going to join that, not when, you know, all of that, finalize that.
Actually, Randy and I talked about when you weren't here that you should do it.
So. Well, since I just toured the Prairie Island facility that North Dakota customers are getting energy from right outside of Minneapolis and saw firsthand where that stuff is being stored now, which is just in a field next to the plant that's surrounded by a berm, it clearly we need to figure out long-term nuclear waste disposal in this country. It's being created. These facilities are serving an important purpose to citizens, and we should be responsibly storing that waste long-term. And the Obama administration has really dropped the ball on this issue, and we need to get engaged in advocating with the groups who are working to address the long-term need there. So I'm glad that our consumer advocates and whoever else was involved, commissions previous, got involved in this and are at least getting our consumers credited for the money that's not being spent to create a long-term storage facility now.
Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK3. I move the commission suspend Otter Tail Power Company's rate and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing for its 2016 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor, case number PU16-14.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In December of last year, Otter Tail filed a request for approval of its 2016 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor to be effective April 1st of 2016. So today we, of course, suspended that, and anyone requesting a hearing must do so by March 1st of 2016. The proposed change would increase the average monthly cost of $1.08 for the average customer using 1,000 kilowatts. It deals with the Langdon, the Ashtabula, and the Laverne wind farms. And I will say right up front for Otter Tail is I'm very concerned of why they're raising $1.08 for the average customer without adding new facilities. And so obviously we'll have a further discussion on it, but in reading through their filing, they're talking about how basically that they had some revenue calculations that the true-ups weren't exactly as they had thought they were going to be. And I'll tell you that if, you know, when we have these riders that additional costs are added because additional facilities come online, it's a basis of, okay, why there's going to be more costs. But these wind farms have been in operation for a while. All three of them have been. And so, you know, anyone requesting a hearing can certainly do so. But I met with staff quite a bit on this. And, you know, I think for us, whether we do an informal or formal, we can get all the information available. But I will just put the warning call out to Otter Tail. They better come through with a full detailed calculation of why they want to raise these rates without adding new facilities and why they didn't notify or catch these true-ups earlier because we're also engaged with Otter Tail on some SPP discussions. And so I just want to see what's going on at Otter Tail right now. We've really dug into MDU over the last few years in some rate cases. We've certainly had robust discussion with Xcel Energy, and I think it's perhaps time to have a robust discussion with Otter Tail about what they're doing with their meeting their needs and how they're keeping track of some of their costs.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. That concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Excellent. I do want to back up on the nuclear storage just to clarify that the way the companies are handling it is safe and it doesn't threaten anybody today. It's just long term, not the way that we should be disposing of nuclear waste. So there's nothing, no public threat now. It just needs to be dealt with from a long-term standpoint. So, okay, that concludes our agenda items. Any closing comments?
I do not.
All right. Nope. Then we'll open up for questions.
Could you go over the, for the Dakota Access, the tax numbers, the tax estimates that you had done?
Sure. Yep. And again, I'll emphasize these are estimates from our first hearing. The total cost, $1.4 billion. Estimated sales, state sales tax, $40 million. Local sales tax, $1.7 million. Randy told me to slow down. State income tax, $1.5 million. And estimated yearly local property taxes, $13.4 million.
If I could add, too, Commissioner Crispin, you and I were talking about no particular case, but you had a number that you used to use for when a project costs X amount of dollars, how much of that goes to labor?
You know, when we used to deal in the Senate with construction projects at power plants, you know, whether it was, you know, redoing the boiler, adding pollution control, it used to come out always fairly close that it was about 50% supplies and 50% labor. So you do a $300 million project, you had $150 million of wages going out.
You can see why the laborers are interested at the amount of dollars with over a billion-dollar project, how much of that is going to go to actually people out there making a living and collecting those wages.
Any other questions?
The Brady Wind, you mentioned there may be a Brady 2. Is there?
Well, staff has already been notified informally that they may be seeing an application for Brady 2. So I just throw that out there that we're going to be, of course, go through the Brady Wind LLC. But perhaps if you talk to the company, they might give you an inkling of what they're up to. But usually they notify staff what might be coming, and then staff, of course, get that application, and we'll go through. Say that again, Jerry?
It's here.
It's already here. Well, there we go. How's that for quick?
So they arrive in the mail, and then it takes a day or two for things to get officially docketed and distributed to staff. So is that what you're saying? We've got it. John has it.
Yeah, it's in the docketing process.
Okay. So we can we dig it out of the docketing process and give it, since we mentioned it? Okay. So after this, we'll follow up with the size and stuff. Size, anything else? Location, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Geographically speaking, how close is it to the wind farm in Adams County?
Say that again?
Close is it to the one in Adams County?
Thunder Spirit?
Thunder Spirit.
Well, this is north of New England, and so how far from New England to Hettinger, whatever that distance would be, I guess, is the distance of these two would be. I don't know that off the top of my head.
I have to go look at the map.
I could tell you if it was north-central North Dakota exactly how far it was.
What was the meeting times, places, and whatnot again?
Okay, the corrected notice will be it start at 9 o'clock Mountain Time City Hall for the power line hearing, and then 11 o'clock Mountain Time at City Hall in Dickinson for the wind farm.
What was the date?
On March 2nd.
And did we ever determine whether Kevin Kramer's from Candu or from Rolla?
I texted Kevin, and I haven't got a text back, but I'm pretty sure he's from Rolla. He lived in Candu, but I think when him and I were bantering back and forth, I was born in Botno, he was born in Rolla. Both our dads worked for the co-ops in those towns, so We'll have to see. We have not solved it officially, Dave.
I think Chris is from Candu, maybe.
Chris may be from Candu. Rolette.
That's what Wikipedia says.
Okay, that is correct then, because I was thinking the RO. It is Rolette. Yeah. That is correct.
They're both wrong.
What is it?
Well, they're physically, geographically close, too. They're only, 12 miles apart. So.
But is a can-do attitude better than a cavalier attitude?
Can-do attitude better than a...
cavalier attitude?
I think when you're in the U.S. House, it is, yes. Any other questions? Nick, you look like you're still confirming. All right.
Don't forget about our hearing
Lisa,
tomorrow.
You're good.
Yeah. All right. Actually, okay, there you go. So now that it's approved here within North Dakota, can you even estimate when construction will be since it still needs approval in Iowa before?
I believe their plans are to start on some of the above ground facilities in short order, within the next month. So, but the actual pipeline construction, I stopped estimating those with Enbridge Sandpiper Line because it seemed like they were going to start as soon as, you know, they could. But the Minnesota permitting has taken 2 years since that date. So, yeah, it just they've got one more state to complete. And I would assume that the company won't start on the actual pipeline until they have permitting in for the entire route.
And there still are, as Commissioner Fedorchak pointed out, some contingencies they have to work out with the SHPO in some of these areas. So, you know, that's our approval today moves the ball forward, but there's still things they have to work out.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Nothing else? Well, we will adjourn for 15 minutes and come back for the admin portion of the meeting.